You are listening to Northern Community Radio. It is about 10 minutes after 8 o'clock. It's the Wednesday morning show, and I've got some VIPs in the house. In celebration of the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, the Bemidji Public Library, Beltrami Historical Society, and the League of Women Voters hosted a Women in Politics discussion last night. And joining us now from that discussion are the president of Bemidji State University and NTC, Dr. Faith Hensrud, Bemidji Mayor Rita Albright, and Bemidji City Councilwoman Emily Rivera. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering if you're all in leadership positions, some elected, some climb the ranks. I was wondering if we could go around and talk about your path to where you are right now. Rita, you want to start?
Sure, I can start. And this was a question last night too. How do you really get into a position where you could run for office and be successful? And for me, I started by volunteering for city commissions. So the first thing I volunteered for, I think, was the Charter Commission. The Historic Preservation Commission I was on, and then I was also on the Planning Commission. And in particular, the Planning Commission is great learning ground for understanding the development and land use and the issues that are coming before the council and some of the kinds of things that they have to consider. So I think I was on the Planning Commission back in 2003, and I didn't run for office then until it was in 2010, the first time I ran for office. So sitting on those commissions was really helpful. The Charter Commission also is important for Bemidji because we are a home rule charter city, and that's really the constitution that lays out, here's the form of government we're going to have, and these are the roles that each of us play, whether they're citizens, staff, or elected officials.
So did you go to the city and ask about how you could get involved, or like how did that unfold exactly?
I saw ads in the paper that the commission had openings, and so I called and applied. And in fact, if people are interested in that, right now on the city's webpage, the front page where you land, generally speaking, our city clerk posts the openings that we have for our commissions, and there may be something on library or arts or parks. So it could be a number of different interests that people could sign up to help with.
Okay. And then you became a council person.
Right. I ran for city council. Mm-hmm. And then that's a four-year term. Midterm, after 2 years, I ran for mayor and was elected. And so I've been elected mayor four times.
Awesome. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Emily, you're kind of new to being
still
in public office.
This is definitely, you talked about a path to getting here, and I didn't see this anywhere on the path ever.
Okay.
But you just kind of, it fit for, you know, the progression. You start out and you're just trying to get through. And it's those people that come across your path that are kind of guiding us, I think, and we don't even realize it. And whether that was, you know, I had wonderful professors at BSU when I was going to school for social work. And I have women who I'm still wanting the approval of because their standards were high and the expectations for what we can achieve were high. And so still trying to, those women, those mentors, those educators, doing justice to the work that they're doing is, I think, important for us. And, you know, my work has given me an opportunity to work with individuals over time who are doing their best to just survive, doing their best to just be treated with equity and have access to things that we take for granted, transportation, housing, etc. So identifying those issues, it's that next step of, okay, well, what are you going to do about it? And getting involved in boards and commissions, whether they're local ones, you know, there's township roles, there's all kinds of different roles that we can look at. But knowing that I couldn't just sit there and pontificate and complain and not do anything. And so that's what got me going, and, you know, having that encouragement. And that's where I think as women, we, you know, they talked last night a little bit about, you know, men and their attitudes and how they treat women. And we got to remember how women treat women. And there's a lot of times where, you know, young women who have a lot of passion, a lot of drive, a lot of direction, kind of get diminished, and there may be some jealousy or that, you know, so as it's not just men who need to value women, it's women who need to value women. And that's part of bringing that forward too, is those types of issues. We need to talk about it. It needs to be an intentional conversation until it becomes accepted.
Yeah. What was the tipping point for you when you decided, I'm going to run for city council?
She was recruited.
There was definitely a recruitment. There was a few issues that I kind of was fired up about that I wanted to be able to have a voice towards, you know, how that impacts people on a personal level. Mm-hmm. And unless you've seen that firsthand or been a part of it firsthand, it's, you don't really know what you don't know. You don't know what it's like to experience that. So it's important when we consider our policies to look at all levels of ability, all levels of inclusivity and equality. And so that's what I wanted to push for. And so, yeah, there's a lot of things, but some of the issues that were coming forth that we're told are important, it's like, but there's other stuff that's important too. Let's talk about it. You know, let's start having some conversations. And
yeah, it's a testament to the importance of diversity at the table, not just gender, but background and what we experience. Now, Dr. Hensrud, you are in a position that's wasn't voted on by the public necessarily. How does one end up the president of a university?
Well, I think my path was a bit unique. I started out as an officer in the United States Army, just fresh out of college, and I went through the ROTC program when I was in school. And I spent 3 years on active duty managing the equivalent to stevedores. So longshoremen, basically, that load and unload ships for the military. And I left the military and then managed truck drivers for 3 years. So it's a little bit of a unique path. And at some point during that, I recognized that I really liked the training aspect of both jobs and really teaching and helping others do their jobs very well. So I determined that I really wanted to get into higher education, and in order to do that, I needed a master's degree. So I had an undergraduate degree in human biology, so I had no management education except for the School of Hard Knocks. And so I determined I would get my master's degree in management, and then that opened doors for me in higher education because I needed the master's degree in order to teach. And I started in a technical college in Superior, Wisconsin, and moved into the university. And 21 years later, I left that institution as, starting out as an instructor, I left as the provost. And I think for me, it was having somebody who saw some potential in me and encouraged me to take on some additional leadership roles. And it was very unique to be able to progress in one institution through different leadership and management positions. And then I got to the point where I looked around and I said, well, I don't believe my boss is going anywhere. So it's time to start thinking about whether or not I could apply for a presidency and be successful with that. Mm-hmm. My one choice was Bemidji State and Northwest Technical College. And I was very pleased to be selected for that.
Well, how many women have had that role?
I'm the second.
You're the second.
Yes. There was one other woman in the 80s, and she was only here for a little over a year.
Okay. You mentioned last night that there was somebody along your path that was really a mentor and encouraged you.
Yes.
Could you guys talk about, you don't have to name those individuals, but what that meant to you and how that helped catapult you forward, if you will?
And for me, it was my boss, the provost at that time, who had been there for about 3 or 4 months, and I had worked directly for him. And he felt that having somebody in an associate vice chancellor role there at the university would be beneficial. So he offered me an interim appointment. And I did that for about a year, then applied for the position. And from that point, he encouraged me to take a program called Becoming a Provost, which is the next step up, so that when he left, I was then ready to take on that role.
That was Dr. Faith Hensrud from Northwest Technical College and Bemidji State University. And now it looks like Emily Rivera, city councilwoman, is going to say something.
Yeah, you know, if that question is a very good question, because I really was trying to, like, how can I narrow that down? Who can I identify? And I think that there's just a lot, you know, whether it was in education or just different jobs that I've had over time and the different women that I've come across, women who have created programs and created ways of doing things that have made legislative change, and watching the power of just their silent brilliance, you know, that willingness to put yourself second to others, and then when those times to shine come up, then you do. And I don't know, with whether it's in work, I've just been blessed to be around a lot of really intelligent, powerful women, and it's really inspiring.
The question about, you know, who mentors you or who helped you get to where you are, I think we can all recognize that among the three of us that women usually need to be encouraged and asked. And that was true of me. You know, Emily didn't think about running for office until someone said to her, you should run for office. You're very passionate about these issues. You can hear from her voice. She's got a very good voice around equity. And people saw that value that she could bring to the table. And so they encouraged her to run. The same was true of Faith with her path. And I would also say that is true of me, that people encouraged, you know, I got calls and said, you need to run for mayor. We want you to run for mayor. And so I think it's just a universal that women generally have a hard time recognizing in themselves what the next step is, but others can nudge them along and be invited in, and women need to invite other women in, and men need to also invite women in.
Huh. So much of, I mean, everything we do kind of adds to our whole person. You worked for the DNR for a long time. How did that add to your job as a mayor or as even a city council person?
Yeah, that's interesting. I wasn't a career DNR person because my path was a bit, I started out as an assistant planner, and then I was a community development director. I worked for a regional development commission, and then I worked for Leech Lake Band as a planner, and then I went to the DNR as a regional planner. And then I was appointed regional director. So I did a bit what Faith did in my quite short professional career, and that was to reach the level of, you know, leadership in the DNR. And I found a lot of overlap because that job was really constituent services. That person, the regional director, is kind of the face of the commissioner in the greater Minnesota. And so we interacted with a lot of elected officials, whether those were county boards or city councils, watershed boards, legislators. And then, you know, if there is a problem that a constituent has, they call and try to help fix it. That's exactly what I do as mayor as well. So there was a lot of overlap.
Were there any obstacles to getting to where you're going? And how did you navigate around over any of those?
Well, sometimes family can be a bit of an obstacle if you have young children or other commitments. You know, you have to have a job, perhaps, to help support the family, and doing an extra thing like running for office can be a burden.
I would echo what Rita said about family and having the support of your spouse, having the support of your kids. I was working on my master's degree, and I had a small daughter at home and a son on the way. And without my husband being there to support that, I would not have been able to continue with that. The same with the doctorate. He would take the kids to McDonald's Playland when I was working on my dissertation. So really a critical piece, and allowed me to pursue that goal.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. Any obstacles for you, Emily? Or
You know, I think, at least speaking for myself, I think I put a lot of obstacles in my own way.
And
I think we do that, you know, like, oh, there's this reason, that reason. And so that was a big part of what I needed to overcome when I made the decision to do it. Like, jump into the pool. And because there's a lot of great reasons not to. And so, you know, you've just got to be able to, any fears you do have, you got to face them and know having that support, having those people that will be there to help you through those challenging times is very important. And that's where I get into the passionate part of it, is in order to support our women and or fathers, single fathers or whatever, we need adequate childcare, round-the-clock childcare. Those are supportive things that if there's a way to make it happen on this local level, we need to work hard, whether it's improving our transit so that they're open later hours or have a different kind of schedule. Just having those conversations about those things that we can do as a community to support. Because, you know, not having a spouse, I kind of had a kinship, a family that took care of me and helped me with my kids. And without that, I wouldn't have been able to get my degree. I wouldn't have been able to, you know, take classes towards my master's degree if I didn't have that support. And understanding that not everybody has that level of support. And so, you know, what systems can we create to get people to the next step?
Mm-hmm. Do you have family in town?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My kids are grown and my granddaughter, and they all still live with me because it's really expensive to get your own housing.
Yes, it is.
So
yes,
it is. I've still got firsthand experience.
It's interesting to keep in check, what am I putting in front of myself? What in all of your roles, what's coming on the horizon that's really exciting to you, either at BSU or at NTC, something that you're part of?
We just celebrated our centennial at Bemidji State University. So you're in your 100th year you are, the women's suffrage movement is in its 100th year. And that was exciting for us. We had the opportunity to open a time capsule that was placed in 1918. And we placed our own. So 100 years from now, someone will be opening that time capsule.
Wow.
And at NTC, we're having today is a special day. It's our very first annual day of giving. And our goal is to raise $50,000 for scholarships and student support. And so it's just a wonderful opportunity for 24 hours. It started at 7 a.m. So folks can give to the technical college in a variety of ways.
They go online then to do that?
Or? You can, yes. Mm-hmm. And the Northwest Minnesota Foundation manages our technical college foundation. And so you can go right online and donate there.
That's awesome. Emily, are projects that the city is involved in that really have you excited?
There's a lot of projects that have got a lot of focus. And, you know, that there are a number of things. It's I don't know if it's excitement, but it's interest in problem solving some of these things, like our water and, you know, how are we going to develop the community in the best way that meets the needs of the people that are here and not just the people that we want to bring here? You know, how are we going to do that? I'm looking forward to that part of it. That's exciting for me. The learning part of it is huge right now. I'm still, you know, but As I get more information, I'm becoming more confident in my role because, you know, with understanding, we can achieve a lot of things in a lot of areas. So, and as much of an introvert as I am and have been, I really am looking forward to those one-on-one conversations that I have been having that really inspire and can kind of guide how I'm approaching, you know, different areas, whether it's a committee I'm on or whatever. So that part of it is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Rita?
I would say that one of our challenges at the city right now is that we're really in growth mode. So the population here has grown probably 8% since the last census in 2010. I'll put in a pitch for census. Be sure to fill out your census form. It's really important for many aspects of what municipalities, counties, and states do. You know, it could mean the difference between 10 electoral college votes or 9 in our state. And so we want to make sure that everyone's counted. So that's coming up next year. But handling the growth that we've had now, about 3% annual growth as far as our population, one of the challenges we are having at the city is that we can't have economic development and growth and ignore the costs of economic development and growth. And so for the city, the costs include our water, well water issue that we have, which there's some contaminants, and we're looking at a potential for having to treat our water, which we don't treat now. We have a capacity issue probably coming up in the next 5 years on our wastewater treatment facility. And so we want to think about that. You know, capital costs at major facilities that we own, for example, the Sanford Center, are some things that we're struggling with at the city. And also just street infrastructure, storm sewer, all of those utilities that are under the ground, and even the redevelopment of 197 on the north side of town is an infrastructure need and cost that, you know, it's great to beat the drum and say we're really growing, we have new jobs, we have new businesses and all of that, but there's a cost to that, that we just can't ignore that cost of economic development.
Yeah, I don't. A lot of people don't think about that piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been 100 years since the suffrage movement, and yet there's never been a woman president of our country yet. And in a lot of areas of the world, there have been women leading entire countries. Thoughts on that?
It's time. Beyond time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Faith can jump in here because I know that I've seen her present on the fact of how many women are in our state legislature, for example. But I agree that we are not well represented across the country in state legislatures. We're not well represented across the state in mayor roles. I'm in a Minnesota Association of Mayors, and you know, there aren't that many women around the table, and I recognize that. Even at the local level, township, county, cities, we do not have a lot of women represented. And so, and that's often a place where women can get a foothold in order to run for higher office. And so encouraging those school board, township, and municipalities, counties to elect women, I think is one way to bring that diversity into our state legislatures.
Mm-hmm. And it's certainly, it's also a trend that we see in higher education. Across the nation, only 30% of presidents are women. Minnesota is doing better than that. In our public higher education, we have over 50% of our presidents or chancellors that are women. So there's a lot of work to be done in that regard. And it's really, as Rita said, it's about encouraging younger people to start thinking about these roles in the future and then gaining experiences to help them become eligible and to become visible. Yeah. So that they can make a run for any of the positions.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the whole if you can see it, you can be it mentality for
correct
girls,
yep,
people in
yep
general. I mean, mm-hmm, I know my daughter's 15, and it doesn't seem like there's any holding these girls back. They're so excited about being in control and kind of steering the future. It's really exciting. And a lot of that comes from people like you who are visible in their day-to-day lives. So thank you for serving and serving well. So any last thoughts?
I appreciate that you're lifting up the fact that it's 100 years of women's suffrage, and I want to encourage all women to get registered, to vote. I know when I'm door knocking, the first question I usually ask is, are you planning to vote in the next election? And then the discussion will go on from depending on their answer. No, I don't really vote. And so then I'll try and encourage them. You know, it's easy to get registered. Well, I don't really know who to vote for. And I said, well, you know me. You don't have to fill out the whole ballot. You could just, it would make a lot of difference to me if you would just, you know, go there and put the bubble next to my name, and you could get that, you know, great badge of honor, which is the I voted sticker. And it would be kind of like your trial to get out and vote. But I want to encourage women to do more than that, to take the time to get registered and find out where their polling place is. And the next opportunity for that will be March 3rd, which is the state presidential primary. And then, of course, we'll have our state primary for if there are any contested offices in the state is in August. And then the general election is next November. So you have time to figure it out and learn a bit about how to vote. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, just to kind of jump off of that is during the last election, there was a lot of, you know, especially the presidential election, there were a lot of people who were just like, I'm not going to vote because whatever. And what I think we forget a lot of times is that there are so many more offices that are on that ballot that are, you know, for our day-to-day life, probably more important than that presidential vote. You know, who is going to represent me in this town? Who is going to represent me in my county? Who's going to represent me at St. Paul? Those are very important to what happens to us directly. I mean, I'm not saying federal policy isn't important, but we've got these local day-to-day issues. And so getting to know those individuals, school board, however it is something that is almost more important at least in my view, because the presidential issue is going to be decided on a much larger level. It can mean a few votes can mean the difference in our local elections. And so we really have to, I think, bring that to the forefront as well, that, you know, you may be disgruntled with this element, but there's also all of this that's significant to us. So
yeah. And of course, I just like to share the importance of education and the transformative power of education, whether it's a diploma, a certificate, or a degree. I'm a first-generation college student, youngest of seven kids, first in my family to go to college, and I wouldn't be sitting here had I not taken that first step. And more and more, it's so critically important as our young people are considering what they might want to do, and even individuals who are adults. It's never too late to come back to earn a degree, certificate, or diploma. So,
that's right. That's Dr. Faith Hensrud. She is the president of Northwest Technical College and Bemidji State University. We also heard from Emily Rivera, Bemidji City Councilwoman, and Bemidji's Mayor Rita Albright. Thank you, ladies, for coming in and for serving our community and beyond.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.